following talk was recorded on the 17th of September 2023 by spiritual leader Reverend Kelly Isola, entitled Tikkun Olam, Have I Done Enough?
I'm talking about Tikkun Olam, which some of you may be familiar with. It's a Jewish term, a Jewish tradition. But I actually want to back up from that for a minute and start with Rosh Hashanah, because Rosh Hashanah is this week, and it's the new year, the Jewish New Year. This Jewish New Year is 5,784. And we thought 2023 was a long time. So this Jewish New Year, which started Friday at sundown, which for me was yesterday, and goes till Sunday at sundown, which for you is today. And it's celebrated, Rosh Hashanah is celebrated as the birthday of the world. It's not just it's the first of the high holy days in what's called the 10 days of awe. So it starts with Rosh Hashanah, and then the last day, the 10th day, it culminates with Yom Kippur, which is the Day of Atonement. And so there's these 10 days of there's several high holy days throughout the 10 days, but I wanted to start with Rosh Hashanah and then move into Tikkun Olam and what that is and why do I care and what does it mean for me kind of thing, is because Rosh Hashanah it's celebrated as the birthday of the year, of the world. And it's associated with the creation of the world. So while it's, you know, the dawn of another new year, but it's really about the creation of the world. And, you know, every faith tradition has its own, you know, creation stories and narratives and myths. And they're all just wonderful. And they're all really magical. And they're all, you know, it may not be your theology, but the myth and the story and the idea of them all is really quite majestic and really quite, for me, really awe-inspiring. You know, this, it's a cycle of coming and going, right? Life is that cycle. And that's what Rosh Hashanah is that returning to new beginnings. And Tikkun Olam fits into that. Because it's while Rosh Hashanah is celebrating the creation of the world, the Jewish tradition of Tikkun Olam implies that while the world is innately good, its creator, and again, this is in Jewish tradition, its creator purposely left room for us to improve upon the creator's work. So let me just say that again for you. You know, the tradition is that it, you know, and the implications of Tikkun Olam is that the creator, you know, in creating the world and it, you know, creating it as innately good, but left room for us to improve upon it, which I think is really fascinating because it's a serious paradox, right? Well, didn't, you know, the creator, and in Jewish tradition, that would be God, you know, in New Thought and Unity, God is principle. But to think about, you know, God in Jewish tradition and other faith traditions as creator, but wait, left room? So isn't God like all powerful? Like, you know, it just seems like a great paradox, like to leave room for humans to improve, right? Like it really goes against the brain to think, wait, I'm going to improve on God's work? Really? And the answer is yes. And I'll unpack that for you. But hold on to it. Yeah, Raina Shea likes that one. I like the thumbs up. Yeah, so hold on to that idea, because we're going to go into it, you know, and to just sort of tease out what Tikkun Olam means is that, so Tikkun, that first word, T-I-K-K-U-N, and then means to repair, to improve, to fix, you know, and then Olam, O-L-A-M, means all of the time, you know, all of time or the world. And I just put that in the chat if you have access to the chat so you can see the words. Most every faith tradition has some form of the spiritual practice of quote unquote repairing the world for all time, you know, and or improving. It's just, you know, in this context, it's okay, so we're improving on the creator's work. And again, I'd say, yeah. But just again, hold the idea loosely for a minute as we keep going. But then when I think about that idea, I'm like, okay, but if in New Thought, right, in Unity, we believe that inherent goodness, right, exists everywhere. So, you know, is always everywhere present. So what is there to repair, right, or fix or improve upon? And what does that really mean, you know, in today's world? And underneath it all, I know that most everyone, probably largely unconsciously, but most all of us at one point or another, we ask ourselves, you know, we understand the idea of sort of repairing our world or improving our world, because we know there's a lot, at least here in my world, there's an awful lot that's, you know, breaking down and broken down. And some of it needs to, right? You break down to breakthrough. And then there's other things that need attention and care and reparation and restoration. And so underneath all that idea, I know that most of us at one point or another have the thought, and have I done enough, you know, in this life? Have I done enough with my life? Have I done enough for what the world needs, right? Or some variation of that thought. And again, it's largely, I think, unconscious, but because at least here in the US, we have very much a culture of scarcity and separation, that idea of enough, you know, output and production and being perfect and all of that, that it seeps under that, have I done enough in this life, right? Have I done enough for what ails my world? And then my question is always, well, what exactly is enough, right? We think of enough as a quantity of something, when really it's a consciousness. And I'll say more about that in a few minutes. We'll unpack the enoughness. And yet I know that it's a scarcity thought that many of us carry, again, largely unconsciously. So I want to share with you a Myrtle Fillmore quote that actually comes out of We Wisdom. And then I want you to just kind of be with that and hold that. And she said, it comes out of We Wisdom's Way. If you're not familiar with it, this was a children's magazine that Myrtle Fillmore, created, and it was sent out for many, many years, even long after she died. I think it stopped in the early 90s, but someone else may know more exactly when. But this quote comes out of a 1914 edition of We Wisdom's Way. And I'll tell you more about the story, but it's Aunt Joy and this little girl, Grace, are having this conversation. And so Aunt Joy said, she's reading from Romans. So Grace is kind of explaining. Aunt Joy said sacrifice was from some words that mean to make sacred or holy, and that holy means just the same as whole. She said God didn't care to have dead things and parts and pieces given to him. He wanted wholeness. So to present your body a living sacrifice unto God, which is from Romans, was to give him your whole undivided self. And I remember, and I'll bring this up again, but I just wanted to read this for a moment, because I when I sat with it, the first time I kind of heard this, I remember reading the words of Paul's in Romans, in the Christian Testament, and I, of course, you know, wrinkled, being a good theologian, I wrinkled my nose, and inside I just kind of thought, yeah, I could feel like this contracting when I hear the word sacrifice and calling God him. You know, it did not resonate with me at all. But, you know, over time, kind of deep in my understanding of scripture, do I read words like those and feel like there's this, like I'm going to break out in hives, you know, or this allergy kind of overcoming my body. Instead, I read the words and, you know, wherever it is, whether it's in Hebrew Testament or Christian Testament, and I really just look, you know, listen to the words and wonder what they could mean for me today. And then there's other times I just don't engage with it at all, which is for me, the beauty of scripture is that it means what it means based on what I discern. I don't have to look anything up. I can take the words into, you know, and discern for myself. I have the faculty of wisdom, right? And many others, to just have the words sort of, I kind of like wash, let them, the image in my mind is kind of washing over me, and there's a net in my heart and it catches, you know, what is the kind of there for me to chew on. So it, you know, when I read that piece from We Wisdom's Way and the sacrifice, you know, and the pieces parts, and giving those to God, I sat with it. And when I read the piece and, you know, and Grace's little Grace, the little girl is, you know, talking about to have these dead things and parts and pieces, you know, given to God, I realize that if I read that like a little girl, childlike, inquisitive, you know, practical thinking, here's sacrifice as pieces, parts, right? And giving those, and we give those to God, right? So that we're not divided. And in that context, it kind of makes perfect sense. It, you know, perfect sense, air quotes. But with a childlike, you know how kids, they just hear it and it's very literal. Right. So dead things and pieces, parts, and, you know, give those. And yet I really, you know, the more I sat with it and, you know, with Aunt Joy's definition of giving God my whole undivided self, I began to wonder how often do I really give my undivided self? And I'm not talking about giving my undivided self to God, because that's, God is not an outside entity. God is a principle. You know, God is not something I sacrifice things to or ask forgiveness from or make deals with or even loved by. But God is principle, a principle that I use to be my most noble self in the world. With this context, I hear Aunt Joy's words of giving my whole undivided self as a call to look how I am being in the world with others, which is tikkun olam. Right? How am I being in the world with others? You know, how am I repairing or fixing, right, for the whole world? Am I giving my undivided self to whatever's in front of me, right? Whatever life is in front of me, whether it's, you know, an animal, a plant, another person, just, you know, standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon, looking out over the world, taking a hike through a forest. Am I giving my whole undivided self to what's in front of me? Because in giving my whole undivided self, it's not possible to do that and not be contributing to repair and restoration, right? And then it leads me to, you know, I have that idea. And then I think, well, have I done enough? Like we think of repair, improve, fix, you know, those notions as I need to be doing something, right? I need to be doing something and need to be doing it bigger and better and faster and more. And where can I slip it into my calendar, right? Here's my good deed doing, you know, well, I have 15 minutes here on Friday from 11 to 11:15, and I have this Sunday afternoon, you know, no. It's not about doing necessarily as much as it is, am I giving my whole undivided self, right? Here in the US, we live in a culture of scarcity, largely unconsciously, even though we may use words of abundance, right, and gratitude. But here in the US, there is still very much alive this, you know, running narrative. It's like this river. And when I choose to declare my enoughness, right, and I reclaim my worthiness, right, and I give my whole undivided self, then what I, you know, I'm engaging the dignity that is inherent in who I am. And when you do that, you are reclaiming the dignity that's inherent in who you are. So enoughness is not a quantity as much as it is this idea of dignity. You know, when I withhold, parts of myself from another because I'm afraid, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, but, you know, I think when I look around at the people in my life, there are very few that that I give my whole undivided self to. And there's a lot of ways that we kind of can be divided. And it doesn't mean even on purpose, you know, or I'm trying to hold back from someone. It's just that, at least in my world, in my life, you know, you kind of get beat up a little bit. And so we get a little cautious. And, you know, and when I'm not giving my whole undivided self, I'm not declaring my enoughness, which is, again, not a quantity, right? It's a consciousness. So, you know, and what the world needs most is the very thing that I'm holding back, whatever that is. You know, I'm holding back my authenticity. I'm holding back my vulnerability. I'm holding back my capacity to, you know, to be fully loving. I'm holding back my capacity of forgiveness. You know, whatever it is I'm holding back, it could be something little, it could be something big. And yet what the world needs most is the very thing that I am holding back. So I come back to that, you know, Tikkun Olam, have I done enough? And what is that, you know, have I done enough? You know, is it about the doing enough? Have I, or translate it to, you know, what am I holding back? The idea of Tikkun Olam is said that the world is broken into a whole lot of pieces and everyone is supposed to find them and put them all back together. And what I would suggest is maybe that we don't have to find them. Maybe we are the pieces. So when I ask the question, I think about Tikkun Olam and I have I done enough? It's maybe I don't have to find anything, you know, those pieces, the broken pieces, but maybe I am the piece. Maybe we are, you know, the pieces. You know, I love that the characters in that We Wisdom story are named Joy and Grace. Right? Because when I'm in a scarcity mindset and my insides are comparing me to everyone else. And of course, when I do that, I don't know about you, but I never measure up. I'm not sure why, but I never measure up. It's, you know, I'm not being or doing enough, right? There's some sense of inadequacy in any way. And sometimes it just comes and goes a little bit. And sometimes it's just this tsunami that takes over my day. But what my practice is in those moments is to give myself large doses of grace. I give myself, this is how you do it. This is how I live, that Tikkun Olam, have I done enough? Have I given myself large doses of grace? And I repeat that over and over. I give myself large doses of grace. And what emerges from that is the joy of that dignity. Right? Remember, I mentioned the dignity, and dignity is knowing my wholeness and yours. Dignity is enoughness. There's no measuring stick. There's, you know, knowing, it's knowing I've done my best, and I'm the only one who gets to decide what that is. Right? Just as you get to decide for you. So dignity is knowing that I have given my whole undivided self to the best of my ability, to another, and knowing that you have too, right? Because we are, you know, it's not about finding the pieces, but we are the pieces and we are forever, you know, interconnected. Whether we recognize it or not, or whether we experience it or not, you know, my life is because your life is, you know, and another piece of this, the Jewish tradition, it holds that there's this paradox and this promise of life that there is this endless connection. And the in Jewish tradition, the name is the divine presence of God. And it says that it's an indwelling presence between human beings. It's that indwelling presence. Think of it as that we space, right? The indwelling presence between human beings. And in Jewish tradition, it's a synonym for God. And it's kind of in exile until we enliven it, right? And until we bring it to life, we enliven our own center. We enliven, you know, the centers between all people, right? That's that all of the world and for all of time. And I always want to remember I do the best I can, right? I am fully human, fully divine, and I'm here to enliven that, you know, the center of me. Like, I know that there's, you know, we teach and I say there's, you know, I'm fully human, I'm fully divine, but I'm not always aware of it. So this paradox, you know, in the Jewish tradition of that indwelling presence is always present, and it's in quote unquote exile until we enliven it. And we enliven it by giving ourselves large doses of grace. When I hear, you know, something around being enough or something of that nature, that the answer is always yes. There is no no answer to, am I enough? Have I done enough? Am I being enough? You know, have I checked enough things off the list? The answer is always yes, because again, it's not a quantity and it's not a doing thing, but rather it's a being, it's a consciousness that we come from, right? And this idea of creation in the Jewish tradition is that, remember I said at the beginning that the belief that the creator created the world, but left a little room for improvement, you know? And so that's the place. So to me, that space of, you know, wait, I'm supposed to improve on God? Yes, because that space that was left to improve, so to speak, to fix the world, to repair, is each of us enlivening that indwelling presence. It doesn't mean that there's anything lacking, you know, in principle. It doesn't mean anything's lacking anywhere. That space that's left, you know, creation is always continuing. It's always evolving. It's always emerging. So that includes us. We're bringing it to the space. Tikkun Olam. Have I done enough? Yeah. So the last piece I'll share with you before we move into meditation is, you know, that in Genesis, we hear the let there be light. You know, God said, let there be light. And that light comes into, you know, filling the darkness. And in Hebrew tradition, the part of the story is that there's these 10 holy vessels that came forth, and each vessel was filled with a light. So there's these 10 vessels. It's like a fleet of ships, and they're each carrying this cargo of light. And had they all, quote unquote, arrived intact, then the world would have been perfect. But the vessels were too fragile to contain such a powerful divine light that they broke open and they split, and all these holy sparks were scattered everywhere, like sand in the wind, like little stars and little seeds. And these sparks fell everywhere. And that's why we're here, right? We're the sparks, and our you know, our reparation of the world is enlivening, right? And in gathering those sparks, is if the person I'm with doesn't know their spark, guess what? I'm here for that, right? Bring my whole undivided self. And when I don't bring my whole undivided self, okay, no shame, no guilt, no blame, just know it, just recognize it. And give myself large doses of grace. Say that with me. I give myself large doses of grace. I give myself large doses of grace. And in the words of Myrtle, she says, I am not invisible. I am visible as an apostle of power and love. I am not invisible. I am visible as a power, as an apostle of power and love. And I put that in the chat. I'm not invisible. I am visible as an apostle of power and love. Let's take that idea into meditation. So if you're comfortable, you can close your outer eyes. You can leave them open and maybe lower your gaze. The idea is that you do what's comfortable for you. Right? You, what is it that, you know, for your body to have a sense of being settled, right? For your body to have a sense of being grounded. Follow the breath. Follow the rhythm of your inhale. Follow the rhythm of your exhale. Don't slow it down or speed it up. Just follow your breath. The inhale and the exhale. Holding the words, I am not invisible. I am visible as an apostle of power and love. I am not invisible. I am visible as an apostle of power and love. Because I am that light. I am that holy light that has been scattered across the globe. So pause for a moment. On your next inhale, imagine golden light growing within yourself, maybe in your chest or your belly or your back, wherever that light might be, and just enlarge it. You get to imagine it. Whatever color it is, you get to grow it. You get to enliven it. Remembering that when we enliven our own center, when we enliven our own divinity, right? When we bring life to our divinity through our humanity, we are striking chords, these sympathetic fibers among all living things. And we can illuminate or we can obscure the light. And we gently give ourselves large doses of grace when we realize we're obscuring the light. And we let that indwelling presence thrive in our light until it's no longer indwelling. I am not invisible. I am visible as an apostle of power and love. I am visible as an apostle of power and light. And let's hold that in the quiet for a moment. So remember, Tikkun Olam says that the world is broken into pieces and everyone has to find them and put them back together. And maybe we don't have to find them. Maybe we are the pieces. As holy sparks, we gather. And when we gather, those broken vessels are restored. The repair of the world happens in front of us and emerges. As holy sparks, we are not invisible. We are visible as apostles of power and love. And so it is, and so we go forth and be it. Amen.